tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Doris Dua.
Yep.
This is...
Don't you love her? Love her madly.
Yes. All right, there she is.
Don't you love her? She's
walking out the door. As Mother Norma did. As Norma did at the end of this episode. Welcome to the Bates Motel After Buzz After Show. We arrived at episode number 5, the one we've been waiting for, because
yes.
It's directed by our good friend Nestor Carbonell.
Our good friend.
We're so excited about that to talk about this one. Dua is here.
Hello, I'm Dua. Here. Yes, I'm How here. I'm so excited. I wasn't feeling well and I almost didn't come, but this episode was so good, I couldn't not talk about it.
It was very good. And we also, joined by Nana Blasquez.
Yes, and I'm not sick, so Dua.
Good.
But I did love this episode just the same.
I'm Joe Braswell. I'm mercifully not joined by Joe Sanfilippo, but though I do really miss him.
Yeah, I miss him too.
He's out away on assignment of some sort. So.
He's on an assignment.
On assignment.
He's like in the CIA or something.
Yes, he's on a special mission. But episode number 5, The Deal. A lot happened here, man. Lots to unpack in the old Bates Motel. Let me tell you something. We're only 5 episodes in, and there's so much story.
Yeah.
Well, doing it, man.
Well, we are halfway through the episode, through the season.
Oh, that's true.
Because there's
10.
Only 10 episodes.
Oh, my God. They're really, like, there's cramming some story in this movie. Yeah. We're halfway through. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Makes me feel better. I forget this is a 10. Mm-hmm. I just want to reiterate, I just love the way... these seasons unfold as a mystery. I was watching this episode, I was really just struck by if you take away the Norman Bates psycho Norma, take away all the psycho legends and lore and all that mythology and all that, the psycho universe, just if you can call the show White Pine Day, and it's compelling and good and really amazing. I love it. We talk about the town being a character the whole time, but I really just the goings on of the town and how between Chick and Bob Paris and Sheriff Romero and the politics involving Marcus Young and it's all good stuff.
Yeah.
I love it. I know you love this episode. What do you think?
Oh, I thought this, I found myself like frantically scribbling notes because all of the dialogue in this episode was so content rich. Mm-hmm. There was so much in this episode. I love that we got to see like a little sprinkle of like the sweet Norman again.
Right.
I love that we are now getting to the point where I think that Norman is not being able to tell the difference between Mother Norma, the delusion, and real Norma, as we saw. So we're really unpacking the things that we were waiting for, and it was just really exciting. And they ended the episode on such a cliffhanger.
The cliff is this. We're hanging right off the cliff.
We are.
Right off the cliff. They do that a lot in most of these episodes, just kind of some sort of like... either a cliffhanger or some sort of like extended little thing dangling that they leave out there for us.
And can I just say that your prediction was half right. My prediction was right.
Which prediction did I have right?
Your prediction was that somebody else was going to find that zip drive.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the good old Gunner, look at him coming out of nowhere, hacking it up.
Yeah, hacking it.
Man,
hacking it. Better than the guy in the cafe.
I used to decrypt movies and I was like, wait, what? Gunner?
You know, it's raining.
You can't even carry a 2x4.
So kids, apparently there is some good to do if you can torrent stuff illegally.
Yeah,
you can
discover
secret files somewhere down the line. Yes.
Amanda, what do you think?
I
watched it with you a little bit. I watched for a second time with you. You were definitely some audible, like, whoa!
There was some good stuff. I mean, the scene in Bob Paris's office at the end was hilarious.
Man, great
just
stuff.
The facial tics that, I don't know if you want to call it tics, but just Bob Paris, you know, reaction to Norma's demands and all that. I mean, I just love so much about this, and we get to see more. I feel like we're learning a little bit more about Romero, and obviously, since Nestor directed this, I'm sure there was some motive for that too.
Yeah, well, you'll ask him that because Dua, you'll be happy to know.
I'm so excited.
Mr. Carbonell will be joining us on the phone, not in person, but he's going to call in a little later.
And this isn't like last episode where you said it was Freddie Highmore, but it was really just Filippo on the phone. This is actually Nestor.
If Sanfilippo is on the phone in 20 minutes, I am going to be really pissed off.
Flip the table.
Sorry, Flip.
Flip the table. Sorry. No, it's not Filippo. We love you, Filippo. It will be the actual Nestor Carbonell calling in.
This was his directorial debut.
Minutes. Yes. First thing directed, and also his first time directing this episode, which are one and the same. I want to talk to him about what it's like to direct this episode and some very specific scenes, because you notice a lot of the dialogue, how packed with exposition, but just how packed with information Ann Pelzer was. One of the things I noticed about this is how there was so much reaction, so much that wasn't on the page, for instance, in the scene you just mentioned, in the office, where the three of them are sitting there, and Norma is sort of saying her demands. That there's so many takes there, and I'll ask Nestor about this, but I mean, that is such an intense mix of comedy and suspenseful dread, and just Norma's just saying, like, if you read on the page, she's like, this is what I want, but you do cut to Bob Harris, and he's looking like, what?
Yep, and then you cut to Nestor. It's like, when you really delve into, like, to deconstruct the anatomy of a scene, and the whole episode was leading up to that scene. Everything was leading up to the scene. The fact that, Bob Harris or Parrish?
Paris.
Like
Paris. The city in France.
Like the city in France Texas.
Yeah, Bob Harris or had Texas. A conversation with Romero about, getting, I need that thing. I think that Norma has it. And then, of course, Dylan and Norma's confrontation where Dylan is like, you need to give it to Romero.
Yeah.
And everything was leading up to that moment where... and so there was just so many little things, and you can really see inside everybody's head, everybody's thoughts through their facial expressions.
That's what's great, because you have all this tension leading up to this big meeting, and even the name of the episode, The Deal, it's all about this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And here we go, and it's completely not as you expect it to be, so tense. It's like Bob just barely can keep a straight face as is happening.
We'll ask Nestor about that, like about how it plays out. And the last thing I'll say before we run through this episode is there's a couple scenes like that. The scene with Paris and Marcus Young and Sheriff Romero was also a lot of things that were unsaid, a lot of looks in that room, a lot of looks. But also that final scene at the table, at the kitchen table with Dylan and Norman and Norma, they're sitting there having that conversation. And again, Norma's face, I could not read her to save my life. Is she okay? Is she mad? Is she whatever? But something was going on.
I thought that she was absolutely all right with it because she gave Norman that look. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's going to,
I don't know. This is.
And then, of course, that was it. Those were feelings that she was obviously not ready to do.
One quick thing, because you mentioned the comedy of this thing, and I mentioned this line to you. I don't know if did you catch the Wi-Fi line?
Remind me?
There was a line when Dylan arrived back at the motel and Emma was showing these people one of the rooms.
Mm-hmm.
She set the Wi-Fi password.
Mother.
Mother, all in caps.
All caps.
Which I thought was hilarious. Yep. So, yeah, just little cute little Easter eggs and little jokes there. Anyway,
which the over-under on every episode, someone screaming either Norman or Mother. Yeah. I don't know what that's another drinking game.
Yeah.
Someone's going to scream, Mother! Yep. Or Norman!
Yeah.
So, Mother in all caps is awesome. So, let's just get into this a little bit. So, we open, we see, the last we saw, Dylan had chased down Norman, and Norman is threatened, says he has to tell Mother it's what it is, and he runs off to go tell Mother, presumably. Dylan is so distraught by this, evidently. We see the aftermath of this, because he is parked outside of a bar after he's maybe had one too many.
Not the first time we've seen him like
that. Not the first time we've seen him like that. I mean, and we've all been there, Nando. And I know.
We've all been there, you one person that I'm talking to right now.
So that was kind of interesting to see how he handles that. And then we cut to Norma on the road, which I like to see. I'm going to mention this to Nestor as well. I like to see a little more of White Pine Bay. I like the open fields. That's a very cool, I've never seen that side of White Pine Bay before, but, driving down the road and getting almost run down.
And there's the car again.
Scene.
There was the shot of the front bumper. That's very intentional.
Yes. Well, we'll see. And that, I believe that. So she went off the road, has a very, very ominous conversation, like, you could have been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And, I got to tell you, it's driving me I want to ask you, how is this, this whole thing of Norma, her refusal to give the give up the flash drive, and after all of these things that are happening to her, is driving me nuts. I mean, do you did you buy me? Why is she? Is that? Because are you okay with that?
I'm absolutely okay with it because I think it's 100% of her character. I mean, she explained it all in that scene with Romero. This is the first time that she's had anybody by the short hairs. She's very selfish. She doesn't care what this does to anybody else, and she's willing to use it as leverage. I mean, did you see that she almost, like, the way that she almost skipped into Romero's house when he's like, get in here, and like that smile that she gave, and she's like, I got it.
Right.
You know, got it.
And also, I think what you said is very key. It's a selfishness part, because she is far too, it's just kind of the selfish Norma that says, I don't give a care what's going on in this town. You know, I'm keeping this for myself. And it's just, oh man, it just drives me nuts when Dylan is begging her in that scene with her, like, Mom, we've got to get rid of this. We've got to get rid of this. She's like, no, don't make me do it. Don't make me do it.
Yeah, but do you know what the line was that actually made her go to Romero? He goes, this is the first time I've had a family. Dylan says to her, you know, I've been working really hard to have a family. And she's like, okay. So she goes, but she's not just going to give it up to Romero. She's going to do it on her terms.
On her terms, yeah.
You know, that guy outside, you could have been dead, Norma. The guy that was in the Mercedes. Is that the guy that they found dead in the Camry later?
No.
That was all girl. That was the threesome girl. Wasn't that her?
Was that Lindsay?
Yeah, I thought that was Lindsay.
What do you mean?
I think he went to go talk to, not Lindsay, I'm sorry. The guy in the Camry?
It was a guy.
Yeah, it was the guy in the Camry.
Okay. I don't know who Clay DuPont.
Clay, it was the guy that Romero was talking to the fisherman about. Glade Dufont, I think, was the guy in the Camry.
Okay, I missed it. I thought it was the girl he went to talk to. Last episode.
That's what I thought first, and then I was like, no, that's a guy in there. And it was Clay DuPont. It was the guy that was just bird watching, right?
Oh, okay.
Well, it was the guy who was just bird watching, and then Romero confronted Paris about this, about him, and said, he said, you know, I see your kid, DuPont got rid of the body, and that's when Paris said, that's a big accusation.
Uh-huh.
And then later on in the episode, we find Clay DuPont dead.
Well, yeah, so I turned away when I saw the blood. So I thought,
yeah, you're weak like that. I'm sure.
So there's that. So I want to get to, you know, so Norma has now is finds herself in the hospital, and you know we're this sort of really tense moment where, you know, Norman said, like, I had to tell her, you know, and Emma's like, I had to tell mother, and so Dylan runs to the hospital, and you know, to check on his mom, and she's, hey, what's going on, Dylan? What's wrong? Nothing. Yeah. And so this is our first real glimpse into Norma. I think we all had that moment of like, oh, Mother, yep. He told Mother Norma.
Mm-hmm. He had a blackout, and I saw him mumbling to himself. And you're like, oh, dear.
Mm-hmm. Yes, or oh, Mother.
Yep, and they talk about that a little later when he's like, weren't you wearing that blue and white dress?
Yes, which is, you know, which we can get to that in a second. But that, I mean, we're really getting into it now because, you know, Carlton Cuse said we're going to get into these episodes. We're going to see Norman have a harder time differentiating the delusions of Mother Norma from the real Norma.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we, you know, because he's having these harder times differentiating the two, you know, we'll, and then this is the start of that. But we'll get to how it manifested itself at the end and in the middle. But after that, that confrontation, after that realization, and Norman has a realization, right? That he's like, oh, that wasn't, no, I, that wasn't me. Was that me? And he, well, that was,
and yeah. He, and I think that that's when he starts kind of thinking about it. And that's when he, cause after that, after that exchange, he becomes a lot nicer in the episode, like a little bit more back, like the old, like, he's like, I know that there's something wrong with me.
Right.
You know, I want to be a man now. I want to be a good man.
Well, not before he had the conversation with Norma. Like, he asked, you know, did I talk to you yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
What happened? He goes, no, you had the blackout, and you're wearing that white Dublin white dress I like. Like, what I'm trying to figure out is, what is the run-up to Norman's blackouts? I mean, like, and what is... Because there's definitely a shift. It seems to, like, he sort of goes up to a certain point, and then he loses it, and he becomes... He's up here in Mother Norma's zone.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes down, and he's completely normal and, and noble and sweet and wants to do the right thing. But then something just sort of ramps him up, and I don't know exactly when he's on that ramp up or when he's on that ramp down. I mean, can you guys tell?
Or what triggers him.
Or what triggers him.
I think that's really
important. Is there a tell that you can see that's happening with him? That, other than, do you know anything, Nando?
Do I know anything?
Anything at all.
I don't see the tells. I mean, I think that's what makes Norman so dangerous. Right. You know, yeah. I don't see the tells.
And if you could predict it, I think it would make it a little less interesting to watch if you're like, oh, here it comes.
Yeah.
And not dissimilar from Norma, because I don't know what the F Norma's going to do from moment to moment. Mm-hmm. Just like as evident in that last scene, she's like, I'm like, oh, Norma's taking this like a champ.
Yeah, right.
And the next thing you know, she's like throwing, furiously packing her bags. But I want to touch on the meeting, the first meeting with Bob Paris, and Sheriff Romero, and our boy Marcus Young is sitting there as well in the restaurant. And it's like every time we see, and I love the way they're unraveling this Bob Paris situation, because every time we see Kevin Rand, Bob Paris on screen, we learn a little bit more about him, the history of the town, and more importantly, a little more about Sheriff Romero and his relationship to Romero.
Yeah, apparently he had a tough childhood.
Well, we've learned a lot. So, like, they played ball together. They've known each other for a long time. He knows about his childhood. They were friends. He even dropped the, like, you've killed for this town. You know, so don't, and which kind of harkens back to episode one or two when he's like, don't lecture me. Episode two is like, don't lecture me about, you know, about, well, I forget what the line was, but somehow don't lecture me about what to do with this town because you've done whatever you've done. But so they have a deep past, and I, you know, and it makes me wonder, so whatever Harris is doing, the whole notion of him telling Romero about the flash drive and sort of spilling it, two girls are dead and it's for the flash drive, and this is happening, so I need you to find it for me so we can just stop this madness. Like his matter of factness, sort of in some ways, to me, indicts Sheriff Romero as part of this whole sort of conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. So now with saying that, do you think that Sheriff Romero, you know, giving in and taking Norma to Bob Paris is kind of just him being obedient? Because, you know, Romero said, you know, you're backing me into a corner and it's not big enough for the both of us. So, I mean, and the last time he was backed into a corner was by Gil when he burned down his house, and we all know what happened to him. So I'm thinking that Romero is very defiant, that he's not an obedient person. You know, what motivated Romero to bring Norma to Bob? Was it to obey Bob? Was it because he felt sorry for Norma because she was having a breakdown? And, you know, wanted to do this and he felt sympathy for her. Like, what is this? Does he have an end game? Like, what is this? There's so many. That's what makes this show so good.
I don't have a goddamn clue. Like, I got a big cloak of mystery, not just shrouded, lay it right on top of Nestor Carbonell, because, you know, Romero's, he's mysterious. Like, I have no, we cannot pin this guy down on his motivations. Those are all great points. Is he trying to please Bob Harris? Is he, you know, more involved in bed with this whole situation than we believe, because we want to believe he's a good guy? His idea of taking Norma to Bob, was that sort of killing two birds with one stone? Was he really trying to protect Norma? Was it somewhere in between?
Let's ask him. Can we get him on the phone now?
We're going to ask Nestor. He's going to be on the phone shortly. And so we'll get to that. But also, before we get to Nestor, I want to get to this whole Caleb situation. Now, Caleb was looking longingly at the photo of him, and presumably him and Norma. And he's off in the woods, and he's chopping some wood to sort of get some aggression out. And your boy Chick shows up, Nando.
Yeah, he does.
What happens then?
Well,
I mean
Chick, he wants to hug it out. I love his line about, you want to hug it out. So many words, but
Chick, well, no, yeah, the issue with Chick is, you know, also a very mysterious, this is the I don't know who's more mysterious, is it Chick or is it Sheriff Romero? Because in the shrouded in a mystery showdown, you know, these two guys are winners. I understand, everyone, that Nestor Carbonell is on the phone.
I'm sorry, I just
this
can't
very moment.
Focus.
Everyone relax. We have Nestor, are you here?
I am. How are you guys?
I'm fantastic. Dua is about to have a heart attack. She can't contain herself.
Well, I saw that Marissa was holding up the sign that you were on the phone, and I was all right. Nestor, how are you?
Good. Is this Dua?
This is Dua. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Excellent, excellent job on this episode. This episode was so good.
Thank you so much. Well, I had a lot of help, and I had a phenomenal script that Carrie Aaron and Scott Kozar wrote, and obviously you know the cast. So it was a real privilege to get to step behind you know, and do that as well. So that was such a treat. So lucky. Very grateful.
Well, this is Joe Braswell. We have a lot of questions to ask you about Romero, of course, still shrouded in mystery and some questions. And I want to get into a little bit about the episode itself, because I thought you did a fantastic job in the episode. It was actually this is not because you're here. This is my favorite episode.
It was.
This is a great episode.
Mm-hmm. Are you kidding? No, that's really sweet. Thank you. I when I read that script, I was just I was over the moon. I couldn't believe that I was going to get it. You know, there was so much payoff in that episode from the third act on. That, mm-hmm. And it's also we're at the meat of the season now, just halfway through. So we're getting into a lot of payoff territory. So I was, oh my God, I couldn't believe it when I got that episode.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a lot about having help. You know, considering you had this kind of episode. I mean, how did they get to support you? How did the cast and the crew get to support you on this?
Well, amazing. We have an incredible, as you know, Tucker Gates is our producing director. He does directs four episodes a season. Mm-hmm. He did five the first season, but he does so much. You know, as if that weren't enough, he helps all the directors in pre-production. So he will, he'll walk them through the sets, and obviously a lot more than that. He'll help get the script in a condition where it can be shot in 8 days, because they're brilliant scripts, but they have to be tailored to that format. So he does a lot of that. And he did that with me. He certainly was there with me, just from early on in pre-production, and also going to scouts with me. And then Tucker was immensely helpful, enormously helpful. Once we got through prep, and Carrie Aaron was there. Carrie was there rewriting Scott's amazing script to sort of again fit the timeline. Because there were so many locations, we had to collapse scenes. There were actually four scenes we shot that never made it on air. Yeah, the script was long. I mean, it's an amazing script, but unfortunately we're confined to 42 minutes and change. Not like premium cable where you can the show runs as long as it needs to run.
Right.
We have to make that 42 minute make it under 42 minutes. So we had to get it into shape, and Tucker and Carrie, we worked on it. I mean, Carrie really worked on it. And then in terms of, it's amazing what I learned, and I have such an appreciation for just every department and what goes into it. So I would do meetings in pre-production when I wasn't, acting in episode four. I would have meetings and with a wardrobe was my first meeting, which is incredible. Just going through every aspect of, every wardrobe of every character. But what I loved about what Monique, our incredible, head of wardrobe department, and that costume designer, is that she sees everything, and just every head of the department, everyone sees everything through story. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So we're talking about Norma's dress, and she goes, "Well, she would be wearing this because this is how in terms of her mood," and then everyone was thinking in terms of story. So I love that, and it actually helped me. It just reinforced everything I was trying to do emotionally with each character arc.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I'm rambling.
Let me ask you. I want to get just some technical information here, because you mentioned that it's 8 days. Now, is that 8 days of shooting, or is that 8 days including prep and rehearsal?
No. Yeah, it's you get 8 days of prep. Typically, at least on this show, uh-huh. and 8 days of shooting. Now, I got an extra half a day because I had to do that car stunt and the teaser.
Right.
And yep. there was no way to fit that into a regular 8 day shoot. And we were also running against, we were shooting this right before Christmas, so in Vancouver there's very little light, right around that time of year.
Sure.
So we had to extend to a half day on a Saturday to shoot the actual stunt with incredible stunt crew. So 8 days of prep and 8 days of shoot typically.
When you say stunt, are you talking about the car sequence with when Norma gets driven off of the road at the beginning?
Exactly. Yeah. That initial sequence. Yeah, we had to carve out a half day.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because you had a lot here. I'm glad you mentioned, you had a full blown car stunt chase. You had a lot of different setups on that car stunt. I love that whole thing because I like to see a lot more White Pine Bay, and I felt like there was a lot of open space and really cool, you know, like sort of planes and space there. But also, yeah, there's a cool move there when the car was chasing Norma. I couldn't quite see who it was. He was a little blurry. It very much was like Duel or something, like Spielberg's Duel or something. Was that, I mean, did you blur that in post, or is that like, I cannot see what's going on back there? Is that just me being crazy?
No. Everything was done in real. All the stunts were, you know, none of the actual stunt elements were done in post, and that particular thing wasn't. I mean, there are things that we've had to green screen here and there, you know, some driving sequences, but that particular one we didn't green screen. What we did use in the stunt, which was, I didn't know we could use, was about four GoPros.
Oh.
So we set them up.
That's great.
And that, maybe that's what you're referring to. You know,
yeah,
they were set up on posts. One of them, you know, the car smashed into a post that
exactly
had a GoPro on it.
Yep.
One was on the ground. One was on a car.
Yep.
So yeah, we were on a process trailer. We had a number of cars, a car that was towing it, a car that, and then when it was free driving, we were just in front of it. Sometimes we were pretending to be the car that was coming up to Norma, and we would just come up to it. Camera would come up to it.
Hmm.
So there were all these things that we had to, you know, different angles that we had to shoot. But the great thing that I had there, I had enormous help from a storyboard artist who came in and storyboarded the whole thing. So when Tucker helped me sort of, you know, go through my shot selection, she was able to basically sketch every single angle. And so when we actually shot it on a Saturday, the stunt might have been the easiest thing to shoot.
Because
it almost shot itself. You know, once the storyboard's in place, you know, the schedule's set, and you just go about it.
That's great. And, you know, I'm just to get back to one more technical question, and we'll get into the episode a little bit. So for you, like, you know, are you able, I mean, do you sit and sort of select the shots and pick your shots, or do you leave that more to the DP, or is that sort of you and the DP working together? And also, like, the question about, are you more of a technical director, or are you more of an actor's director? Do you work with the actors and sort of work with them through the lines and make sure everything's okay? Are you more worried about the shots and the look of the thing? Is it a mixture of both? What was your approach?
Yeah, I loved all of it, because I've never, you know, to be fair, I hadn't done either. I hadn't really had a chance to formally direct actors. You know, to help in scenes,
right,
but never something like this. I've done a lot of little home movies, but those don't really count.
Right.
But the technical aspects always intrigued me, and getting the opportunity to shadow Tucker as much as I got to this year and in the past, but really this year formally, was huge. But I reveled in getting to work with the actors, definitely. I mean, I know these characters. I've been with them for 3 years now, so I had an enormous advantage, you know, in that respect. And I'm also emotionally invested in all of them, you know, just, you know, not as a character, and not just as a character, but as a fan of the show and of the writing and all the actors as well. So that was huge. But I loved the challenge of camera. And what Tucker impressed upon me was, you know, to find ways to mine tension, you know, throughout,
yeah,
and keep the suspense going. And so, you know, I went through every scene, and I did a lot of homework, because I knew I had to. I mean, I knew I was going into so green. I had to probably do more homework than maybe you probably need to, but I wanted to anyway. And Tucker would go through all of my shot selections and say, okay, well, that's great, but try this. And of course, you know, his suggestion would be infinitely more efficient and better.
Mm-hmm.
So I absolutely would change my shot list. But that would also change on the day, depending on, you know, the circumstance. You know, the sometimes we didn't have enough time, so I had to compress the shot list, or you know what, the blocking changed, so, well, that shot list doesn't work, so let's figure something else out. And that's where I have an enormous help from Mike Rich, who's our A camera operator.
Right.
And he was just incredible in freestyling. You know, he actually hadn't read the script. He doesn't read the scripts. So he shows up, and, you know, he sees the scene, and he goes, you know, and you have a take on it, and he'll go, cool, what about this, you know? And so
that's great.
So he's an incredible artist. So, I mean, between the pre-production help I had from Tucker and then having someone to freestyle and be as creative as Mike Rinch, you know, it's you have the problem is you have so many great choices, you know.
Yeah.
And you just got to pick one and go with it.
What I loved about this episode, knowing that you were directing this and just keeping an eye on it, it was, to me, it felt like such a very versatile episode. I mean, you had the car scene in the beginning. You had the very, you know, the ending with Norma storming out the way she was. And you had that iconic moment with Norman stealing the dress. Mm-hmm. moments like that. But yet you had comedic moments, like the whole scene with Bob Harris, his office, when Norma's making that deal, or even a little bit with Chick and Caleb in the beginning. You know, it was a very wide range throughout the episode, I felt.
Oh, thank you. And I, listen, I'm the beneficiary of an incredible script that you said. You know, you said it had so many elements that, so I got to really, you know, I got to play all kind. We all did. Got to play all kinds of colors. But so yeah, no, I was so grateful. I mean, I was at once, you know, freaking out and, you know, by the notion of like, oh my God, I got to do a stunt. I've got to do all these things. I've never done any of this.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I was like, my God, I'll never get a better film school. I just better not screw it up. You know?
I had one question, actually, talking about, Nando just brought up this scene with Norman and the dress. When I was watching the episode, was that a scene that was added after, or was that there for continuity reasons, or was that there from the beginning? Just because when Norma takes all of her dresses and puts them from her armoire and puts them in the suitcase at the end of the episode,
yeah.
You know, so was Norman always supposed to grab that dress, or was that something that was added?
No, yeah, that was always there. It was always part of it. You know, him grabbing it. Yeah, we shot all of those interiors, and actually those were the first 2 days of shooting, and yeah, that was always scheduled. So, you know, she ends up not grabbing that dress, but I don't, you know, in that fit of rage, I don't think she noticed, but but yeah, no, that was definitely scripted. I don't think there was anything, you know, there's only a few moments where we sort of, you know, we improvised here and there, just because, you know, once you get to a set, certain realities hit, and you say, well, you know, yeah, let's see if, and Carrie's, it was so incredibly wonderful about being flexible with that kind of stuff. And so there were, you know, a few moments here and there, like just the thing with in Bob Parrish's office, the scene where we're waiting and Norma's foot is bouncing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that, and you grabbed her foot.
That's cute.
Yeah. But that wasn't scripted. It was scripted that we were waiting, and I said to her, something to the effect of, you sure you want to do this? And she says, of course I'm sure. Something to that effect. You know, it's certainly better dialogue than that.
What about that line about the Wi-Fi in the hotel?
Yeah, that wasn't scripted either. No, it was just scripted that Emma was dealing with a new customer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, you know, I remember reading in a previous episode that she was talking to a customer, was complaining that the Wi-Fi was free, but he's still being billed. And I thought, you know, it might be, we never talked about the password.
Yeah.
So I pitched it to her. She liked it. So
Mother in all caps is awesome. Mother in all caps. I want to get back to this, you know, this notion. Before you jumped on, Dude and I were talking about the sort of juxtaposition of the two sides of how this episode played out. On one hand, there's a lot, the script was fantastic. There's a lot of dialogue giving us a lot of information. But on the other hand, there's a lot of sort of, you know, a lot of things said without dialogue. There's a lot of nonverbal reactions. I mean, specifically, I'm thinking of the very last scene with Norma sort of not reacting as Dylan tells her everything, and more importantly, or even more humorously, the deal scene, the scene in Bob Harris's office. I mean, if you read that on the page, that seems like that could have read just normal. You read that on a page, and Norma goes in and she says the deal, and Bob says yes. But the actual way that played out with the looks on Romero's face, the looks on Bob's face, the looks that how Norma's delivering those lines, it was a perfect combination of sort of like humor and extreme suspenseful dread at the same time. The question is, was that, you know, how much of that is like sort of worked on with the actors and the looks and the takes and the directing? Because that was some Top Gun directing, if you ask me, and Top Gun acting.
Yeah,
you know, that was good stuff.
Yeah. Those things are, you know, my favorite things is, you know, in terms of an actor and getting to do that as director was a real treat. But to Carrie's credit and all the writers, the Bates scripts in particular are the scene directions are they're written, fully written, and the emotional levels of every actor and intentions are pretty much in those scene directions,
so
which is
very
not
specific.
Typical of a typical screenplay. So it certainly is on the page, you know, but those are definitely things that, that I wanted to for sure honor in mind, because it's subtext, and the best writing is when it's all about subtext, and what you're talking about has nothing to do with the subtext. So and that's what Carrie and all the writers do so well, and Carlton is they write scenes that are you know people are talking about one thing but obviously meaning another, and the other thing that they do, and I know Carlton does this in post because I handed in my cut, which is about 2 minutes and 20 seconds over what it needed to be, but you typically, I guess, hand in something a little over, so you give your exec producer something to look at and choices to cut themselves. And what I love that Carlton did when he cut those last 2 minutes and 20 seconds is that he would cut lines that you didn't need and leave it off the look. So he did it himself, even in post, which is real credit to a writer in recognizing that behavior is valuable, and in some cases more valuable than necessarily words.
Mm-hmm. Now, could the same thing be said about that final scene with Norma? Because I can't call Norma Miss Veer from it. Veer is so great, but we're all watching Norma hear this information about Caleb, and we're thinking, she's taking it like a champ. She's doing great. No problem. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, she storms off. I mean, mm-hmm. was that also sort of Norma's, the way Veer played that, I thought was just, amazing and
beautiful.
Full of suspense.
Yes, she played it a couple different ways. At first, she was emotional, and it was scripted that she had a more chilling reaction to it. So we talked about it. I said, "Well, let's try one where you've just shot down. Caleb is dead to you essentially, and let's try one where you're now, your defenses are so they go up so high that you're no longer feeling it. You're just and you're no longer you've now shut down emotionally. So you're protecting yourself. You're covering now.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what she did, and that's what we ended up going with. I mean, it was just so chilling, and we ended up even pairing off more of her dialogue, so that her lack of response was what was making him even more frenzied. Norman, the fact that she wasn't responding to him anymore, the fact that she was almost apathetic, that was almost worse than anything she could say to him. That was even worse than the mirror, smashing the mirror. Just the fact that she wasn't even acknowledging him.
So
we played more and more with that, and I know the execs had, Chris Anagustin over at Universal, and Tana Jameson at A&E, that those were one of the things that they wanted to do more of too. Continue to pare down the dialogue and allow her indifference to make him even crazier. So everyone was on the same page about that. It was really great.
Her indifference makes me nuts as well. So I'm on the same page as that.
I know. You're right, because she's so emotional that when she pulls that, you're like, what is it?
Exactly.
So, Nestor, before me and the boys were actually discussing before about, Romero, we are seeing every episode, I think, that we get like a little nuggets of, your past and your history, your relationship with Bob Parrish. And, we were discussing mainly what Romero's ultimate motivation for bringing Norma to Bob's office. There was the scene with Romero and Bob at the beginning where Bob requests, just get that flash drive. I think that Norma has it. Then there was the scene with Norma and Dylan. And then when Norma finally, comes in, almost skips in to your house, saying, I got it. This is what I'm going to do. I'm, naively optimistic about this really dangerous situation. What do you think? Now, was it, Romero's sympathy towards Norma? Was it, his almost need to obey Bob? Because there's a big history that I know that we has not yet been touched with you and Bob.
This is a debate that Du and I were having again right before you got on, is sort of trying to figure out, as we, I know you said we'll know more in episode 7, but what we like about this is how the use of Bob Parrish sort of gives us a window into, not every time he shows up, we get a bigger window into him as and Romero as well. So after that relationship about the flash drive, and Romero seemed to be on the same page of getting it back, and then him, Norma coming to Romero, we don't know if this is a manipulation move by Romero.
Can I just put a theory before you give the official word, since you have the official word on this, Nestor, of course, on all things Romero.
What's your theory?
But the conversation with Bob Parrish in the beginning with
Marcus
when Romero walks in And Bob Harris pretty much puts Romero a little bit in his place and says, you know, he talks a little bit about his past on the fact that Romero didn't obviously have a very extravagant life, that Harris kind of brought him up. I felt that the speech that Norma had right before she was storming out about just how this town is just all the things that have happened in this town, all and just town her being such a victim.
This town has,
you know. Yeah, I just think in that moment, I felt that was the turn that Romero was like, yeah, you know what? This is a kindred spirit. This town hasn't been the best to me either.
I like that theory, Nando.
Yeah, that
what
is
do you
theory.
Think, Nestor?
Nando, I think you're spot on. You are. I think in that moment, yeah, he did find sort of a kinship with her. I mean, he has already.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she is, you know, she's always gone the other way. The town seems to go one way, and she seems to go the other. And he finds it refreshing, and he does find a kindred spirit in her. And no more than in that moment where she spills her guts and says, "Look, I have been wronged, and I've done everything and I can." And you know, I've been screwed over by everyone, and you know, this is the one piece of hope I have, and I'm gonna, you know, go with it, and I don't care what you do. And again, at that point, he says, "Well, you know, yeah." He gets sort of the gumption to say, "Okay, fine, I'll join you." You know, and without giving anything away, yeah, I think it's he goes into that office knowing full well it's not going to be easy, and it's not what she thinks it's going to be, but I think at that point, almost not caring. Saying, you know what, that's a moment where he sort of crosses the threshold and says, you know what, all bets are off now. I've made the decision.
Is he there to back her up, or is he there to just sort of say, you know what, let the chips fall where they may, I'm just here, or is he there to sort of, is he there like on Romero's side, or is he there on Norma's side?
No, I think he's very much there on Norma's side.
Okay, great.
I think at that point, he, you know, even when he introduces her, you know, this is Norma Bates, he's essentially saying, and I'm her protector,
right.
And I'm here. I got her back. So you know, watch it. So I firmly believe he believes that. Now you know that can change it or can't. You know, who knows? You know, time will tell to see how this deal plays out. But
mm-hmm.
But certainly he certainly goes in there with every intention of having her back, and playing it out.
Sure.
Yeah, well, anybody that's watched the movie knows that eventually this has to kind of go sour and not work out because that bypass, you know, there isn't an exit off of the bypass.
And we don't see that pool.
And we don't see the pool.
You know. You never know, man.
There's always hope.
Man, I got to tell you, Nestor, I am hoping against hope because Freddie Highmore is breaking my heart.
Yeah.
Like just like he did in Finding Neverland.
Yeah.
He's breaking my heart when he's... I'm rooting for this guy to not turn. He's at the end there when he's like, you know, I'm my own man now and you're my brother and we're going to do this. I'm like, that's right, Norman, you can do it.
Yeah.
And you know.
You want to, and he's so sweet and... I know, and to know Freddie too, you're like, there's no way you couldn't. There's no way.
Yeah. Well, and even you know Kenny Johnson's monologue last episode as well. We were talking about how it is such a testament to the actors and such a testament to the writing when you can have all of this sympathy and when you can really feel for you know a man that raped his sister and be like, come on, just let him apologize, give him a chance. Mm-hmm. You know,
they're really. I mean, I just feel like that. You know, Carlton and Carrie really have done a number here in the writers because like we were hoping. Like we're sitting there, yeah, like feeling bad for Caleb, and it's like, wait a minute, this guy, or feeling bad for Norma, wait a minute, this guy's a murderer, and you know, we're in it, and this is not the people we should be rooting for in life.
No question. And you guys said it's a testament to the writers, and certainly in this particular case to Kenny and well, you know, Vera as well, and obviously you know Freddie. You're right to make a character that's seemingly completely unsympathetic on paper. Somehow, you know, redeemable, or at the very least, redeemable, just because you know you know they're wanting to change, or they're wanting to change the past, or rewrite the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and obviously they're remorseful. But you're right. I mean, Kenny's speech last week was just heartfelt and beautiful and gut wrenching, and then you feel for him and Dylan. Like,
yeah,
God,
oh, yeah.
The effect that has on Dylan, you're just like, oh, come on, let him have a dad.
He just wants to have a family.
Yeah,
exactly.
This is just feels so sort of Shakespearean, you know, heading down all these people wanting, you know, this family and wanting the right things. I just know that it's not going to go well, and it makes me sad. But I want to transition into just really quick back. You know, we're talking character a little bit, and first of all. all, there's a lot of Romero in this episode, and you directed this episode. I mean, I just, the one thing I didn't ask you is, what was it like to sort of, when you look in the, you mean last year you had that, whatever, in episode 7 you weren't in. That would have been the one you should have directed, the one you're not in. But this one, it's all Romero.
You're pulling double duty.
What was that like? You had like 4 or 5 really key scenes, and not to mention, you seem like you're in almost every other scene.
Yeah, actually there was 2 that I cut. There's one.
Too much Romero.
It was just too much. I was sick. I was sick of watching myself. There were 2 that one we shot, and we got to half of one because we had to do reshoots for another episode that night. So I had to give the crew over to Tucker. But we ultimately didn't need those scenes, and so we ended up cutting them. But no, it was interesting. The way that it worked out with the episode, the reason I got it, because I'd expressed interest in shadowing Tucker to Carlton, and Carlton said, "Oh, well, you know, wow, I can see you, directing one day." And I go, "Cool, thanks. You know, I just love to shadow him." And he goes, and later on, a month later, he said to me, "If somebody else, someone drops out, would you be willing to step in?" And I said, "Well, sure, yeah." You know, not thinking anybody would drop out, and sure enough, somebody dropped out. But and then I got that amazing call from Carlton, and he was able to make it happen, and Carrie as well. But I didn't know. I don't think they knew how heavy I was. Well, I think they would have had a sense of how heavy I was in it, but not until they delivered the script. I think that it dawned on Carrie. She said, "You're in this a lot." That's all right. I said, "It'll be fine. I have tremendous support with So I had had a lot of help from. Obviously, with the actress, I relied on my script supervisor, Corey Jones, certainly on the coverage, but also, I said, "Do we have choices here? Do I have choices later?" She goes, "Yeah," and she would say, "Let me try one like this." So I would get help from her when I was on camera. Hmm. There was one scene in particular I was worried about because I couldn't really watch Vera. It was the Bob Harris scene because I'd made the choice to really, really keep my eyes on Bob,
right?
Mm-hmm. and not on Norma, so I could hear her and I could certainly hear her performance, and I gave her a few notes from what I heard, but I had to steal away to the monitor and play a few back just to make sure.
Yeah, that's great.
At least on the master, not in the close-up, but on the master. But at that point, I felt like she was so.
Oh, I mean, it is Vera Farmiga. It's not that it's an autopilot, but you're in pretty good hands.
No question about it. But I wanted to make sure I was certainly there for her but that was the only truly tricky part.
Nestor, so I hear this all the time about actors who always are interested in directing, and it seems to be, I think, a progression for some. I mean, some people had a very successful careers moving to directing. Why do you think that happens? What's the pull for actors to want to direct now that you've done your taste of directing?
I think power. I think it's. As an actor, you have, obviously you're looking at the story through the prism of your character. And so you're looking at it through maybe a 2 or 3%, and depending on the role, or 5% or 10% of the role of the story through your, so with the director, you're getting obviously a more omniscient point of view. And maybe it's that. It's like saying, a more of an all encompassing view. And to me, it's an appreciation for not only for the story, but for the story through an actor's perspective and trying to find nuances, in performance. To me, that's the draw for me. It's like, that's what I'm interested in as an actor and as a director is trying to find those, connecting all those emotional dots, seeing the arc in each character and the emotional arc of the whole thing. That's what, appeals to me in the directing aspect. And yeah, of course, trying to do it visually as well, but certainly with the actors, I can't speak for others, but that was a draw for me. I've always wanted to write. That's the weirdest thing.
Oh, really?
That's
directing. I'd always put it in the back because I know it's so time consuming. Hmm. That I knew it just takes you away from your family for so long because you have to be there the whole time.
And right.
Mm-hmm. So I knew that would be a career that should I be ever so lucky to have it. It would be very, trying on my family, and that's why I've never fully pursued it until, Vera was the one who actually brought it up. She's like, "You should direct." And then, and obviously Carlton and Cary made it happen.
Well, they were all right because you did a fantastic job. We only got a couple minutes. Just a couple quick rapid fire questions. One of my favorite moments in Bates Motel this season is the interaction between you and Marcus Young. I mean, if my man slaps you on the back one more time, like he's so backslapping, and you give him the look. Like, are we going to see more of this? Like, is this going to come to... Can you give us a little hint? Are you guys going to square off? Is he going to slap your back one more time?
You're gonna see the great Marcus Young. Tommy's amazing. And you'll see him next week. You'll see him next week. He's fantastic.
Any backslapping?
I don't want to say but he is a formidable opponent, that's for sure.
Okay.
But,
wow. Certainly. And then another thing is just a quick thing in our Canem Club. A little thing I noticed in the background, like in that lobby, was you saw Ted. You saw Kevin Rams, Bob Parris' picture along with all these other guys. Are those presumably the past presidents of the Arcanum Club? Is that
exactly
what's going on there?
Those guys are past presidents. Although some of them, one was the head of transpo department.
Okay.
All part of our crew, I think, was out of a prop department.
Okay, so some more inside jokes.
So all of
our
department heads have been president of the Arcanum Club. Exactly.
Okay. Well, that's good. We have some predictions that we're going to do here, but I think that, well, let's see, you can say our predictions. Let's throw predictions really quick.
And now, you're after Buzz TV. Predictions.
Okay, now so you can tell if we're right or wrong. Do a go. Okay.
Well, I had I like that my prediction was correct and that Norman wasn't the girl or wasn't the one that told Norma about Caleb being in town. My prediction for next week is, I mean, I definitely think that we're going to see Norman, you know, go off the deep end now that his mother is not there. And I think that this is what will trigger him into really go into a psychosis. And I think that I predict that he's going to be wearing that dress.
Oh, wow. Okay. Next episode, episode 6?
Yeah, I say next episode. They're moving it along really fast. Yeah. We only have 5 more episodes of the season to go. And so I don't think they wait, you know.
I'm saying episode 9 for the dress or 10. Go ahead.
They did have have that promo with Norman in the dress.
Yeah.
Right? That really quick shot.
The 360
camera.
360 Vicon camera thing.
So I feel like we're definitely going there. We're going to that. You know, the fact that Gunner opened up this file, I just think his days are numbered.
Hacker Gunner. Puka Shell Gunner is like opening the file, like no problem.
Yeah. He was better than that coffee shop guy.
Yeah. Norman didn't even.
No, I love that. Well, that's what hacking is. Into computers and decrypting movies. That's where it gets you.
I felt that was a promotion for people who like to illegally download movies. It's like, and then you can get the hacking skills to blackmail people, to break into
stuff. Don't illegally download.
Prediction, Nando.
Yeah, I think Gunner's days are numbered. I think he's a goner because he's a loose end right
Gunner's
now.
Gunner's a goner.
I think. And where is Norma headed? I think that's the big question.
I think she's headed to the therapist's
house. We didn't talk about the therapist that interacted. Therapist.
Yeah.
The therapist made his move.
He did.
He made his move. Good
he's
for that guy.
So cute.
He's
I
a
think
smooth operator. Yes.
Yeah. With his beard, he's got some lines. Everything. He's doing the whole thing. Yeah.
I think that's where she's going. I think that she's gonna, because she's so reactive. She's gonna get halfway down, like a miles down the road, and realize she's like, I have nowhere to go, and then she's gonna end up calling him and staying.
But she's
over
got
there.
That gun. She's got that gun.
100% going there. My prediction is kind of. I think I touched on this a couple of weeks ago, but hate to say it. You know, I love you, Kenny Johnson, but I don't believe Caleb 100%. I was so heartfelt and I felt bad for him, but I don't know. I mean, Norma really, you know, it's hard to believe Norma too, but she's so terrified. And I can't tell if it's more terror or anger, if she feels more betrayed, if she's leaving out of betrayal, or if she's packing out of sheer anger or terror, but I don't know. There's something to this that, like, she's so anti-Caleb.
Well, I think that there's a level of shame. I think it comes from shamefulness because as soon as she started feeling these emotions, and it was when she looked at Norman, and Norman was obviously on Dylan's side of this, you know, confession/confrontation, where, you know, I don't think that she would have left had Norman not been sitting at that table.
I always thought that Norman or Mother Norma would be the one to kill Caleb. I think Caleb's got to go. I think it may be Dylan to do that, because I feel like this is a really elaborate prediction, and Nestor, just follow me on this one. This is a really elaborate prediction. I really feel like that Caleb is not who he says he is, and not telling the truth about the whole what happened in their past.
Uh-huh.
I think it'll come out, and Dylan will feel super betrayed and have to like do something to kill Caleb to protect his mom or something of that nature. I don't know. I'm dancing around that, but I don't trust Caleb. Sorry. I don't know. I love Kenny Johnson. I love Officer Lemansky, Lim. Yeah. You know, but I don't trust Caleb.
You don't think that Norma and the gun would end up killing her own brother?
I don't know. The gun. She's wielding that gun too. Just holding it out there.
Yeah.
She's not going to tuck it in the bag or anything.
She knows how to shoot.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. Listen, Nestor, it was fantastic. Thank you so much. Oh, wait. Was I right?
Thank you guys so much. I so appreciate it. And I do want to say one thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
First of all, you're all right. And you're all wrong.
But
next week, I think Vera's performance in particular, it's just unbelievable. It's just, right. I mean, as amazing as she is, obviously, we've already seen her and how incredible she is. What she does in the next episode it blew me away, that's for sure.
All right.
Really?
It's extraordinary. It's beautifully directed. I think it's my favorite.
Emmys and Golden Globes all around.
You never want to say, but if there's ever a performance to remember, it's in next week's episode.
And, okay.
And brilliantly written by Carrie Aaron. I mean, just an incredible episode.
That's a hell of a tease.
I know.
That's a hell of a tease. That's the way to tease the show.
There
we go.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Nestor. We really appreciate you.
Thank you guys so much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Can we give your Twitter handle and your Instagram or whatever you want
to
know?
Oh, yeah. I'm at Carbonell Nestor for Twitter.
Okay, great. Fantastic. All right. Well, we'll see you soon. And Dua, where can we find you?
At Dua Casey. DuaKaissi.
All right. On Twitter, right?
Yes.
Nando?
Now on Twitter at Nandovel, NandoVel.
I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. Thanks again to the great Nestor Coverdell for joining us one more time. I didn't call him Campbell.
Yes.
I made it. We will see you
all
next week for episode 6.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Nestor.
Thanks, Nestor.
Bye-bye, guys.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.